Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Naturalist Capitalist. This is your host, Reed Coverdale. For episode 105, I am joined by Josh Smith. We talk about his political evolution, his run for Libertarian Party chair, and what he wants to see in the Libertarian Party going forward. Without any further ado, here is episode 105. Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm your host, Reed Coverdale, and I am glad that I made it here. I almost didn't. I was in a dead zone with no cell phone service, had trailer issues. My hydraulics weren't working, and the motor to pick the low bed up off the ground wasn't working. So I wasn't sure I was going to make it, but I'm here. I'm in Medicine Bow, Wyoming, in the middle of nowhere, but I've got cell phone service. And I am very happy to have on the show Joshua Smith from Break the Cycle, who had me on his show last night, which was a great time. How's it going tonight, Josh?
Oh, I'm doing just great. Thanks so much for having me on, Reed. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we dive into you, I just want to talk about your show a little bit. Your show is pretty new, but it's taken off pretty quickly. You've had a lot of high profile people. You've had lots of great conversations. I've watched several of them, and it's a great place for people who are either new to the movement or just want to find out more about people they've known about a long time. But why'd you decide to start the show? You know, I mean, we're all doing it, but what was your personal reason for getting it going?
Well, I kind of always wanted to have a show, you know, and I traveled around the country for 4 years, basically. I mean, I went to 40 states over 4 years. Trying to ignite flames of liberty, man. I was running for chairman of the Libertarian National Committee. I got to do some really cool stuff, like keynote the ballroom behind Ron Paul. And I got endorsed by Ron Paul last year for chair, and just really awesome stuff. And I was like, man, I really want to use this platform for something good. But I had no idea how to do a show or a podcast or anything like that, you know? And so a little over a year ago, I started doing this show as an audio podcast. I got out about three episodes. There was two solo episodes where it was just me, and then one episode where I actually interviewed Buck Johnson. Buck Rebel, if you know him from Counterflow, used to be Death to Tyrants podcast. And I wasn't super happy with it. I didn't know what I was doing. I was recording the show from my phone and then just publishing through Anchor. And I kind of always wanted it to be a video show because I know that video shows do better. More people watch. It might give us a better platform to get the word of, the message of liberty spread. And right around the time I did my third show, life happened, man. You know, I went from being a bachelor, living with my best friend in a house in California, to having seven children in the house and a beautiful fiance in 1 year, you know, so it wasn't like I had a whole lot of time to get a show going. But in that time, I was doing a lot of research. You know, I started watching, I probably watched 100 hours of YouTube videos to figure out how to do a good, legit video show. Like, you know, and I started amassing equipment and I got a nice DSLR camera, and then I got some good lighting, and then I started trying to build a backdrop, and I was just researching everything I could. How do you program OBS? How do you do this? How do you do that? And so when I knew that when I did start the show, I wanted it to be a good looking show at the very least. You know, it needed to sound good. It needed to look good. It may not be the best like podcast show on the internet, but it's going to look damn good. And so, that's what I did. And I just said, go for it. You know, and I had this space in my basement, so I cleared it out, and I just started going for it. And I had some luxuries afforded to me over the last couple of years with, you know, being in the movement as heavily as I was and talking to a lot of people and helping a lot of people. And so I was able to get some really good guests, you know, people like Dave Smith and Spike Cohen. And I got Zuby coming on next month. On Friday I'll have Phil from All the Remains. I know you've had him on your show too. And just great people who were willing to come on, even though it was kind of like a bottom level, bottom of the barrel show. But it's doing really well now, you know, and I think I'm starting to achieve what I wanted to with the show. I'm getting some new people interested. We're seeing more people join the show every day. Quite a bit of people in the Patreon, which is also helpful because if you're going to do something, you want to get paid for it at some point, you know? That's where I'm at, you know, and I wanted it to be a good show. I wanted to use the platform for liberty and something good, and it's working. So
Yeah, man, I'm really impressed. Your visuals are great. They're way better than mine, that's for sure. I was kind of telling you yesterday as we were setting up, for the tech that I have, I don't really deserve to be as successful as I am. Mine's kind of off the seat of my pants. I'm just going for it. But yeah, your stuff looks great. And I was pointing out you've got a lot of views for how many subscribers you have too. Like you've got like 2,500 subscribers or something like that, but you got a lot of views. Like the views matter more than the subscribers, in my opinion, I think.
Sure. And the good thing about subscribers is that you get return viewers, right? Like people are, you know that those people are bound to probably watch again. But for me, I just promote like crazy, and I said it on the show yesterday. Nobody promotes harder than a guy with eight dependents and a dream. You know what I mean? And so I want people to show up. I want people to hear what I have to say. I want people to hear what my guests have to say. So I, I'm almost, I mean, I am annoying about it, especially with my Twitter audience, because I have 16,000 followers on Twitter. You know what I mean? That I only have like 1/8 of them are subscribed to my podcast. So it's like, and we talked about this too, that the Twitter to YouTube pipeline is not strong. It is not a strong thing. And so I'm constantly trying to, but Twitter also they throttle your posts with links, right? I get more people subscribing to the YouTube by saying, hey, check the link in my bio and subscribe to my show than I do by posting a link for the show. So, but I do have some really loyal listeners and loyal patrons, and the people are amazing, and they help me out. It's really all about your network. And so when I, a long time ago, when I was first thinking about starting any kind of show at all, a gentleman named Larry Sharp, who's been like a mentor to me, and I spent a lot of time with him, he said, look, if you're gonna do a show, you got to build a team. You got to have a team. Because if you're gonna put out a good show, you need help. You can't do it all on your own. It's very, very hard to do. Some people can. You got it like that. You're doing great, and you have a great niche because you're doing it from your truck. Nobody else is traveling around, stopping, doing shows from their truck. So that's really cool. But so I got great people involved. I've got people who help me out. I got some good sponsors. I got Top Lobster, who is absolutely phenomenal at every single thing he does for the show. If it wasn't for Top Lobster, I probably wouldn't, it wouldn't be half the show that it is, because my branding looks really good. I have cool merch that people can purchase. A lot of these people do a lot of promoting for me and stuff. And so, building that team of people that are helping you out on the show is just so absolutely important if you're going to do a show.
Yeah, definitely. And shout out to Top Lobster. I just threw his comment up there. He's watching. He's back for seconds. So thanks for watching. So I wanted to ask
my boy,
you
man. About, it's my boy. Yeah. Love that guy. Love him.
He's the second best truck driver in the Liberty Movement, is what I've heard. I don't know.
Contractually obligated to disagree with you, sir.
Yeah, there's conflicting information. We'll just have to, we'll have to let that one play out. But
agree to disagree.
So I wanted to hear about like how you got into the Liberty Movement and became a libertarian. We talked a little bit about it last night because we were talking about it with me. With me, I became sort of a small L libertarian all the way back in 2015, probably 2016, somewhere around there. I don't know when exactly you'd consider me an actual libertarian, but I didn't join the party until last year, and I didn't start reading Rothbard or Spooner or any of the libertarian philosophers till very recently. So how did your evolution take place? Who got you into it? And then when did you actually join the party? And when did you like really start internalizing all those beliefs?
Sure. Well, I was a pretty hardcore neocon through my teens. I thought that, I thought war was the answer. We had to do it. I was like many Americans. I thought, we had to go over to the Middle East to protect our freedoms here. But then I joined the military, right after September 11th, I joined the military. I was going to go fight the evil terrorists that attacked my countrymen. At the time I thought that these were, Saudi nationals via Pakistan or something like that. And within a year of being in the military, I was in the Persian Gulf and we were at war with Iraq. In fact, I was sitting in the Persian Gulf, on the USS Constellation with the battle group, when George Bush declared war on Iraq. So my ship was the biggest part of the shock and awe campaign. I forget, you're in your 20s, right? Is that
27? Yeah.
Yeah. So you may not have remembered what the shock and awe campaign was, but here at home, a lot of people believe the shock and awe campaign was just this, this military excursion that we had gone on to liberate Iraq and get Saddam and all this stuff. But really what the Shock and Awe campaign was we dropped millions of tons of ordnance on Baghdad. And, you know, my first thought was, what the fuck are we doing in Iraq? Right. What are we doing in Iraq? Like what did Iraq have to do with 9/11, you know? And so that was already, I was already kind of questioning what's going on. And then they set up this, so they're on the carrier, there's two galleys, right? Two dining areas. And they shut down the second one and they started building ordnance there. I mean, putting together ordnance. I mean, they come in pieces, they put them together, they put them on the birds, and the birds take them off the deck and drop them and come back empty, right? Well, at first they started building these big drum rolls full of leaflets. They had like little drawings on them, and they basically, they were written in Farsi, or I think they speak Farsi in Iraq. And they, you know, started, they just basically said, get out of your homes, we're going to start dropping bombs. And that really, I mean, that hit me hard. I'm going, man, you know, this is a big, big fucking city. You know, this isn't like some desert area like people believe. I mean, we're dropping millions of tons of ordnance on houses and I mean, you know, apartment buildings, and you know, there's family pets there, and people have dreams and goals and want to do better for themselves and children and schools. And that really hurt, dude. You know what I mean? Like as a young kid who thought I was doing the right thing, it started really bugging me. And so when we got back from that, after being, I mean, we're over there for 9 months, and when we got back, I was just really jaded on the military, you know, and I was ready to get out, right away. And I did some more time, and, I didn't deploy again. Thankfully I did end up on the USS Nimitz, and, ended up separating before that. And because my daughter was being born and stuff. And so I was just like, there's no way I'm doing this again. And, when I got out of the military, I didn't really find my political vehicle to be in the Republican Party anymore. You know, and I was a Republican. I was a registered Republican. I supported George Bush, you know, George Bush Jr. They didn't exude my values, because my new values were, I'm anti-war. What we're doing is bullshit. It's time to get away from this stuff. And the Republicans didn't agree with me. And sure as hell, no way in hell was I joining the Democrats. I mean, you know, I was already pretty capitalistic at this point, and the Democrats didn't like me. And plus they were, the Democrats are even bigger war hawks than the Republicans. They, you know, they just have fooled their people that they weren't, you know?
Right.
I got out, and then, you know, I kind of just floated around thinking, I tried to stay away from politics. I was like, I don't really like any of this shit. I was probably in my heart becoming an anarchist, but I just didn't know what the hell that was at the time. You know, of course I knew what the anarchy symbol was. I used to draw it on my binders and shit in high school, but, and then I was sitting in a bar in like 2007 with some buddies, and the TV was on, and, Ron Paul was speaking. I didn't know who the hell Ron Paul was at the time. You know what I mean? And in fact, I take that back. I kind of knew who Ron Paul was, because I had gone to a house party with these twins who were really big fanatics of Ron Paul, and they had like a Ron Paul banner up in their party house. And like, you know, and anyways, so I kind of knew who he was, but I didn't really know who he was. And then I'm listening to him talk, and he's talking about the war on terrorism and how it's failed and how it's creating our enemies and shit like this. And so I was like, wow, this guy's a Republican. I'm still registered a Republican at the time. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to support this guy. So I really got into Ron Paul, and I worked on his campaign in 2008 for president in California, which is, I mean, batshit crazy to try and do anyways. But and so Ron Paul, you know, I started studying more about Ron Paul and getting involved with people who were Ron Paul supporters, I started to hear names like Murray Rothbard. I started to hear names like F.A. Hayek and Milton Friedman and, you know, Lou Rockwell and Tom Woods and stuff like this, stuff that I had never, and then eventually Scott Horton. And, but I started reading, you know, I started reading Murray Rothbard. I picked up Anatomy of the State, and then I picked up For a New Liberty. The Road to Serfdom by F.A. Hayek, and Capitalism and Freedom by Milton Friedman. And it just was like a window that when you open, you cannot close that window anymore. I mean, Once you've looked at the state through those glasses, you'll never ever envision the state the same ever again. And so after watching the GOP just to completely destroy Ron Paul, I mean, to me, this the greatest statesman, the greatest freedom fighter of my generation, And the Republicans basically gave them the middle finger and told them that they don't care about liberty. And that to me was the last time I was ever going to work with the GOP ever. And so I walked away from the GOP, and in 2010, I joined the Libertarian Party for the first time. I think I swear to God that it was Adam Kokesh that I heard it from initially. I heard him talking about the Libertarian Party. He says he was running for Congress as a Republican back then, but he may have mentioned the Libertarian Party in one of his videos or something. So I joined the Libertarian Party because I'm like, wow, here's a whole party for what I believe in, you know? And this is 2010. And so this is, you know, after the Bob Barr fiasco, we're getting towards the Gary Johnson first run. And I'm emailing the National Committee. I'm like, yo, what can I do? I'm hyped up activists. You know, we're on the precipice of the Occupy movement here in Oakland, California, and I'm ready. What can I do? No one ever reached out to me, man. Nobody, you know? And so I walked away after like 3 months of donating to the party, and just kind of did my own thing. I went on to found Think Liberty, which became a really successful publication online with some friends that we had done some other publication stuff with. Kind of just did my own brand of activism for a while, you know. And then in 2016, I was living in Southern Washington, and I'm looking at this presidential election coming up, and I'm going, there's no fucking way I'm going to join either one of these bozos, you know, the Trump campaign or the Hillary campaign. I'm like, dude, no, not going to happen. Right. So I started giving the Libertarian Party a look again, and it was, you know, Gary Johnson. And I had watched the national convention, and I had actually become a region rep for my state party for Washington. I showed up to their state convention, and I was the only person that showed up for my region. And so they're like, hey, who's from region 5 here? I'm like, oh, me, you know, hey. And they're like, cool, you're the region rep. Good luck. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool, man. I guess I'll be the region rep. So I went back down to my region, and we only had one county that had an affiliate out of 5 counties. So I started learning how to build affiliates and write mock constitutions and bylaws and stuff, and all the stuff that the party needs, you know, to create affiliates, fundraising, and candidate recruitment and stuff. And then after the election, you know, I had been a big Nick Sarwark fan. You know, I was Sarwark simp. I was like, man, that speech was, yes, you know, your parties will die and your tears are delicious. I love this. Fucking, this is my guy, you know? And then it was like right after that, he started going after Tom Woods. And I'm going, hey, wait a minute, dude. This is like the Tom Woods, like the man who, yeah, like has, you know, 60,000 daily listeners or something that literally brings more people to our ideas than anybody else in the movement almost. And I was like, nah, this is not cool. And then he started going after Eric July and then Dave Smith and God, who else? I mean, great people, you know, great voices in this movement. And so I started calling some of the bigger name libertarians that I kind of knew around the way. And everyone, I was like, yo, you got to run against this guy in 2018 for chair, man. We got to get this guy out of here, you know? And everyone's like, you're crazy, dude. Like, no way. He's the most popular chair, 2-term. He's a trial lawyer. Like, I'm not running against him, you know? And so, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. We had Think Liberty. We had probably like 12,000 followers at the time. I wrote up this like intent to run statement as like a challenge, you know, like hey, there's a big contingent of this party that don't want to see you do this anymore. You know what I mean? Like you're hurting our cause. And I never thought I was going to do anything, but man, I went to 25 states over that like 6 months. Like I said, I keynoted the ballroom behind Ron Paul at the Omaha Roads to Freedom Unconvention. It was huge. It was amazing. Yeah. My first ever 45 minute speech. I'm going, I don't know, how the hell am I going to talk for 45 minutes, you know? And Sarwark beat me, and he became the chair again for a third term, but I got on the board and I started shifting the Overton window. And if you look today, you know, the goal that I set out on four or five years ago, Nicholas Sarwark got beat by Noda for treasurer of a state party a couple weeks ago. So, you know, I didn't have to win chair to get my mission. The party shifting in the direction I wanted to see it shift in. And I'm happy to say that, you know, those little seeds that started that movement, you know, I was going around the country planting them for 4 years. And so that's really the whole story all the way up to now, you know. And now it's like, you know, I still love the Libertarian Party. I sit on the national committee. I'm in my second term as an at-large rep. And, you know, I don't know that I'm going to run again. I have stuff to do at home. That's one of the reasons also why I wanted to start the show. It's something that I can do from home while I take care of my 7 children, you know? Yeah, that's where I'm at, man. But that's the whole story. You know, it was war that brought me here, and it was great men who shaped my philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, I stayed away from the Libertarian Party. I wasn't aware of how much infighting there was. I mean, I knew everyone wasn't a real libertarian. You know, I'm the only real libertarian or whatever. I knew that existed, but I didn't realize there was this hatred amongst the people in there. I mean, I was shocked when I came in about a year ago, you know, and started looking around. And I didn't realize that, like, the Gary Johnson people hate the Ron Paul people and the Tom Woods people hate the Nick Sarwark people. Like, I didn't realize any of these groups existed. You know, I was like, wait, aren't we all libertarians? Like, what we believe in is already so, like, narrow compared to the rest of the country. And it was just kind of a culture shock to me. But I mean this with all my heart. You seem like a super nice guy. You know, all the conversations I've had with you have been great. I've watched your show. Like, you seem like the nicest guy in the world. So why do people not like you? Like, what's up with that? Like, I don't get it.
Well, I challenged the king, man. You know what I mean? It was like, before I ran for chair the first time, nobody knew who I was. You know, I was the kind of the behind the scenes guy. I was doing like an interview show like this, kind of for Think Liberty for a while. I got some actually had some really cool names like Austin Peterson, Walter Block came on, Senator Lionhelm from Australia. It was kind of cool. Back then I didn't know what I was doing and I was using a gaming headset, you know? No one really knew who I was. You know, and then I came out of nowhere and I'm challenging their king, you know, and these were people who were loyal to the king of the Libertarian Party. And that's what Nick thought he was, the king of the Libertarian Party. Don't get it twisted. That's exactly what he believed he was. And to some extent for that, you know, 6 years he was on that board, or at least four to five of those years. I mean, he was, you know, and so I challenged him, and there was people who were pissed off about that. I came on the scene. I mean, I wasn't nice, you know. I didn't come on and go, hey, everybody, come here, come check. You know, I was like, this is bullshit, and we need to change this, and we need a party that can actually go up against the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, these financial juggernauts, and we're running on $1.5 million a year. We suck at fundraising, we suck at recruitment, we suck at recruiting candidates, we suck at candidate resources, and it was like that shit needs to change, and so people were unhappy about it. You know, and I get that. But there were some people who have taken it to the extreme, and now still to this day, I mean, 5 years later, are still going after me. They've said everything from I'm a woman abuser, a drunk, deadbeat dad, I can't keep a job, I live on couches. Oh God, even this turd Richie Castaldo going around trying to tell everyone that I'm a sexual abuser. And I'm like, drop one fucking shed of proof, dude, one shed of proof. And then we find out that he exposed himself to a minor back in 2008 and got arrested and charged and convicted for it. And it's like, oh, so you're projecting that shit onto me, you know, wood chipper. That's really what it was, you know. I mean, I can pinpoint it all the way back to 2017. I can tell you exactly when it started. There was another woman who was running named Alicia Dern. And we like to call her Derncoat because she was a big reason for why Bill Weld became the vice presidential candidate in 2016. She had made a deal with Austin Peterson that she would promote him for president and she would be able to run for vice president as his vice presidential nominee, and he would get his people to vote for her, and vice versa. And then she went and made some backroom deal with the Gary Johnson campaign, came back out, endorsed Bill Weld, dropped out, and people called her Derncoat. There's some other special things that we could talk about that are really shady about Alicia Dern. I won't get into it, but she and her campaign manager at the time, Angela Fisher Owens, came to me and said, we want to work together against Nicholas Sarwark. He's got to be taken down. And I was skeptical, you know, because I was like, I think these people like Nicholas Sarwark, you know. And so I was like, no, I don't want to be a part of that. I want to run my own campaign on my own merits. I know that I'm relatively unknown, but I don't want to work with another campaign against the campaign. I want to win on my own merits. I have this blueprint that I've laid out for the party. I think it's a good blueprint. I think we can really, you know, with these focused messaging goals and all this stuff that I was talking about, candidate resources, we could be a successful party and show people that we are worth joining. And so they weren't super happy about that, but they went away. And then a couple weeks later, they came back to me and they were like, So we want to start a Me Too movement in the Libertarian Party. And I'm like, whoa, dude, like this is, that's a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anybody in the Libertarian Party that's been accused of sexual abuse or sexual harassment or any of that stuff. So I don't want to just jump on, you know, the train with you guys and start just pointing fingers with you because I don't know any of these stories, you know? So I don't think that's for me. And they seemed a little upset, but they went away. And then 2 weeks later, I'm speaking at the Texas State Convention. We're in Houston. And I went out to the bar with some Mises Caucus people. You know, Texas at the time had quite a few Mises people. Most states didn't. And so we're out having some drinks, and I get a text from Angela Fisher Owens. Hey, some stuff coming out about you from the Washington State Convention. You said something to some woman, and she's upset. And I was like, what? That's my home state. Everyone in the building knew me. I had a live-in girlfriend at the time that we had been together for almost 3 years. I'm like, this is just not, you know, this is completely out of character for me. Can you tell me what it's about? She's all, well, it's this woman, Tishina Pascal, Joe Pascal's wife. And I'm going, no, what, they just donated to my campaign like a week ago. You know what I mean? And they're all working together in this. They're all working together on this board for the Feldman Foundation at the time. And I'm like, wait a minute, all these people are working together. They're like conspiring to start this Me Too movement. And now I'm the fucking patsy for it. That's what's going on. So I upset, and I'm like texting upset. Like, you motherfuckers are going to have to issue a public apology if you say anything publicly about this shit, because it's bullshit. Like, I never did any of this. And their story kept changing to me. Like, I had it all in text, you know? And, yeah. Then they put out an article for this website called the Libertarian Party or the Libertarian Vindicator at the time. I think they changed the name or they changed it to that. So I immediately got on and wrote another article with all the screenshots that I had that totally negated everything they said. I mean, so badly that the Lisa Dern campaign had to make a public apology. Joe and Tishina Pascal had to make a public apology. And I thought Angela Fisher Owens would slump off and take off. And I won that. I mean, it got so bad that my supporters were blowing them up so bad that Alicia Dern dropped out of the race eventually. And it was just me and Nick Sarwark and this communist named Matt Keno at the time. And, but that really pissed them off, you know, that I was able to show that they were lying. And those articles still exist. They're not archived. They're still on the website. I can post them for anybody who wants to see them and show you that these people started all this stuff out with absolute fucking slander and lies. And then they started reaching out to my ex-girlfriends, and they started going, they found my son's mother, who we don't get along, and she said a lot of bad things about me. And so they started going into my family court drama stuff, and they started getting a hold of my daughter. And then they just started straight up making shit up. I mean, this whole I can't hold a job thing. Like, I had been at the same job for, you know, 2 years prior to running my race for chair. And, you know, I had that my own apartment and all this shit. And it was just like complete slander. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And in the end, I imagine it probably worked. You know what I mean? I probably lost a lot of votes because people were like, oh, these, you know, these people are, this guy's drama or whatever. And it's like, it was all bullshit. But they still go at it to this day. They still call me a deadbeat dad, even though I have 7 children in my home. They still say I can't keep a job, even though I just passed my year anniversary of the job I've been at since I moved to Iowa a little over a year ago. You know, it's just the nature of some people's politics. It's ugly. It's disgusting. It's gross. But at this point, I've basically, you know, for the most part, you know, there are some seeds of truth to some of the things they said. Like, you know, I did have back child support for a long time, you know, like millions of other American dads in this country. You know, I'm not the only one. And you know, that's even that has been like more than half. They're still going at it. You know what I mean? They're still going at that same issue. And so, you know, I've come to terms with it, but it's also nice to know that I'm not running for a position on the board again. And I don't, you know, they can say whatever the fuck they want because it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important that people realize this. You know, I had some criticisms with Dave Smith just because of how harsh he was toward Joe Jorgensen during the election. And so I had him on the show, and I don't know if you saw that episode, but I was with a couple other guys with Jeremy Todd and David Fight, and we talked it out, and he told us a lot of stuff that we were not aware of that kind of gave the fuller picture. And I think a lot of people think that unity just means sweeping everything under the rug and moving on and holding hands and acting like nothing's wrong. It's the opposite, actually. It's really about like, hey, you know, there's some real problems here. There are some bad actors who need to be exposed. And, you know, these problems need to be dealt with if we're going to move forward, because they haven't been dealt with. It doesn't seem like, it seems like these problems keep compounding and the sides just get pitted against each other more and more and more. It was funny. You were asking me yesterday when I was on your show if I had changed my mind on the Unity thing at all. And I said I hadn't really changed my mind on it. It's just had been very, it had become very obvious who were the gatekeepers and who was pushing the bullshit. And actually today, I'm in some Amosh 2024 groups on Facebook. Someone was sharing this this direct message that Michael Heiss sent to someone a few months ago about how, you know, Amosh isn't his first choice because he doesn't think he's a great speaker or whatever. So if they can't get Dave Smith or whoever, that they'll, you know, they'll support Amosh in the end, but it's not his first choice. And there was, you know, everyone in the Amosh groups was really angry about this. And so I stepped in and I said, okay, how many of you guys in this Amosh group are going to support Dave as your first choice? Like, how are you in any different circumstance than what he's saying? Like, sure. Will you support Dave if he wins the nomination? And then this guy piped in and he was saying, like, he challenged me. He said, do you do anything but cape for the Mises Caucus? And I said, yeah, I do, actually. Like, I have all sorts of people on my show. I've defended Justin Amash plenty of times. And he said, and he accused me of being an entryist, trying to bring bigots and right wing nut jobs into the party. It's just like,
that's the immediate go-to for anybody when they're talking that hates the Mises Caucus. I mean, that's what they do. They're right-wing entryists, bigots, racist, transphobes, misogynists. I mean, every single woke term they can throw at us, you know, slanderous woke term, they do, because they're scared, Reed. That's what it is. At the end of the day, some of these people like the Libertarian Party being a small pond because they're a big fish, you know, and they've right. had this big platform for so long. People like Andy Craig and Adam Bates and, you know, who else? Richard Castaldo. I mean, they've been bigger names to this very small movement, and they lose that power when the party grows. And so they look for any little thing they can nitpick and they gatekeep. It's exactly what it is. They're gatekeeping because they're afraid to lose their platform. And it's like, so sorry, man. You know what I mean? And in fact, in the words of Michael Heiss, we're going up against people who will napalm your children for resources. We don't right. need people who get upset about memes. We need people who are ready to fight the state. We need soldiers. And so, you know, I don't care that they're upset. Like I've so far passed that they're upset. I block most of them now. I'm like, I'm not even dealing with you in your bullshit anymore. I'm done. I give them all the Michael Malice treatment now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the right move. I think some of these people, you know, I'll stay away from naming names, I guess. I'll let you do that. But, some of these people who have like very few followers, they actually thrive off of antagonizing important people who have a lot of followers, you know, like, and Dave was one of those guys that they just like kept going after. And he actually talked about this on your show. We were finally able to convince him, like, Dave, just ignore them because you're giving them a platform, because they just keep bringing these bullshit arguments that everybody knows is fake. But when you argue with them, you're drawing attention to these idiots. So just like, just ignore them. So I think you're right to just block them. That's probably,
hey man, it took me like 5 years to start learning that. You know what I mean? It wasn't like something I did overnight. I wanted to fight because I wanted people to understand that they were lying. And so, you know, when you the thing about debate and arguments is they're seldomly about the person you're debating and arguing. They're always about the people watching the debate and argument. And I think Dave knows that too. And you know, some of these people, Dave broke publicly in debate. You know, right. Nick Sarwark, he totally broke Nick Sarwark. He totally broke Andy Craig. He definitely, definitely broke, what's that Vermont state chair's name? Archie. Yeah. I mean, he's broken these people because they stood up against him to call him things that he isn't. And, right. Once they realized that they had to just keep flailing to keep themselves relevant. And I mean, if you're ready to move on past those people, it's a good thing to start blocking them, man. Really keep them out. The best way to keep them out of your circle is to just not see them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So going forward, you know, it sounds like Dave might run. I know a lot of us have known that for a little while, but it sounds like he's actually becoming more public about it. I don't dislike Justin Amash at all. I am leaning toward Dave just because I'm friends with him and I really jive with his message. But if he loses to Justin Amash, you know, that isn't a tragedy to me. I think either one of them would be the best candidate the Libertarian Party has had in my lifetime. What do you think about that? I know you're not like 100% Justin Amash, but if he wins and Dave endorses him, what do you think about that scenario?
I'd support Justin Amash over the two old parties. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. I mean, his blue pilled orange man bad stuff aside, he's still very, very, very good on the Constitution for the most part. And I'm not, like I said in our show yesterday, I'm not the biggest fan of the Constitution either. You know, I don't think the Constitution's really done a lot, but I think that Justin Amash, even just presidential run, will red pill people on a lot of things. And so that's good for me. I would prefer a Dave Smith run, but that's because I want somebody who's unapologetically brave about libertarian principles going on a 50-state media tour, because that's what the presidential election is for the Libertarian Party. It's a 50-state media tour for our ideals. And if we have the wrong messenger on that 50-state tour, we're doing ourselves a huge disservice. And, you know, I liked Gary good enough. I thought Gary was a nice guy. I think he made some really good points, but he fell flat on a lot of things, most things. And Bill Weld did not help the situation. I mean, we put a Raytheon lobbyist on our highest ticket for the party. That was a misstep. It was a horrible, horrible, grave misstep for this party. You know, and especially a party that should be putting anti-war values at the forefront of everything that it does. So, you know, I would definitely prefer somebody very brave and very unapologetic when it comes to our principles. That's what I would like to see. I think, you know, Dave has shown that. And the thing is the mainstream media doesn't put our candidates on the show much anyways. I mean, we can get on Kennedy sometimes. We were able to get on Judge Knapp once or twice, you know, a couple of little town halls here and there. But I think Dave has the opportunity to get more media. You know, Dave just was on Joe Rogan. It's the biggest podcast in the world. Millions of people listen. You know, he's able to do these big platforms that our presidential candidates have not been able to do. You know, Joe wasn't able to get on Joe Rogan, you know, and I liked Joe good enough too. I just think she was kind of milquetoast when it came to messaging. I think Spike was better, you know? Yeah. I don't know, man, but I can tell you, I would support Justin Amash. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I would support Justin Amash over, Joe Biden second run or Kamala Harris or, you know, some of these other Republicans that might step up and run. I think that Amash would be better than them. So, yeah, absolutely. But if Dave or Tom Woods, hello, Tom, if you wanted to run, you'd have my full support, buddy.
Yeah. Well, there you go, pragmatist. We would support Justin Amash. I challenge you to say that you would support Dave Smith if he wins. You know, I'm the unity guy. I'm supposed to call it straight both ways. I am seeing a lot more Mises people say they would vote for Justin Amash than I'm seeing non-Mises people say that they would vote for Dave Smith. But it seems like a lot of Dave Smith people don't want Justin Amash to run, and a lot of Justin Amash people don't want Dave Smith to run. I think as long as they run a civil campaign, I think a competitive campaign between them would be great for just bringing attention to the party. I mean, because they're both very well versed in libertarianism. You know, one of them is a congressman who's served several terms, and then the other guy, like you said, he's got all the media outlets all over the place that he can reach, and he knows the philosophy inside and out. That would be an amazing race between them. Like, I honestly hope they both run, and I hope it's very competitive, and I just hope that it's civil. You know, I just don't want to see mudslinging, but outside of that, I think it would be great.
Sure. I don't think there would be a lot of mudslinging, at least not from the Dave Smith side of the party, if he was to run for president. I think Dave's kind of hit this point where he's like, let's stop the mudslinging and start you know, working against the state, and it's good to see. I mean, it really is. You know, I asked about it on my show because I was like the unity guy last year, and he was the fight guy, and now I'm the like, fuck these guys, I'm not talking to them anymore. And Dave's like, oh well, calm down, man. You'll see. You know, and I'm like, all right, dude, whatever, that's cool, man. If you do your thing, you know, let's see what you can do. But yeah, I like I said, man, I wish them both luck. I think they'd either one of them would do us proud. So
yeah, so. I've come to agree with your idea of what the presidential race should be. It's really just like it's just an advertisement campaign for liberty, basically. Like we can't win. I mean, and someone made the point that once it gets to the place where we can win, we've kind of won already. Like you don't even need to elect a libertarian president once you'd have enough people voting for him to get into office, which is an interesting point. Apart from the presidential race, what do you think the Libertarian Party should be trying to do? I'm a really big fan of taking back state legislatures. I kind of like Eric Brakey wants to do, just with the Libertarian Party and in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, I guess, if you got someone who was, you know, like was good or whatever. But the Defend the Guard legislation that a lot of the states are pushing for now, all those types of things, that to me is like what our goal should be 100%. I'm just wondering what you think. Should we actually go after like the Senate and Congress, or is it not even worth it? I mean, Justin Amash kind of gave us a window into what Congress is like now anyway. Like even if we got 10 people in there, it seems like it wouldn't matter. Like you can't do anything in Congress anyway. But what do you think we should be really focusing on?
Well, I think that the people with the visibility can and should run for U.S. Congress and Senate with the visibility. If you have the visibility, right? I mean, people I'm just going to throw it out there. If Scott Horton wanted to run for Congress, I would quit my job and work on his campaign for free. Yeah, I definitely think that the state legislator seats are really important. And we proved this last election that libertarians can win state legislature. And we did. You know, we have two now, both in Wyoming, but we had a really cool program that started a couple years ago by Paula Puzzell, who's our candidate support guy. He's amazing, amazing. And it's called the Frontier Project. And he essentially went around the country and targeted races that he's like, hey, if we put a little extra resources here and here, we can win these. And we did. We won state legislature. Legislator seats for the first time since the 70s. So we've proved that we can do it. We've proved that we're viable candidates in those arenas. But I want people who are going to have the big giant platforms. Like I think Ricky Harrington did really good for Senate in Arizona, right? Or Arkansas. He challenged Tom Cotton, and he got invited to the debate on PBS for all of the Arkansas constituents to see. Tom Cotton turned it down. Ricky Harrington got a chance to stand there for an hour in front of all of Arkansas and give libertarian principles on state-run television that everyone is watching. I mean, huge, huge viewership, right? And he ended up getting like 38% of the vote in a U.S. Senate race as a libertarian. That's huge. We need more people like that can do those kind of things. But that's not for everybody in this party. There's a lot of people who are like, I'm going to run for U.S. Congress. And they post it on their Twitter and they get 4 likes. And it's like, dude, go run for local, go run for a city council in your town. People know you there, you know? So mm-hmm. I think we need our candidates to really understand, their limitations. We need more people to work like Jeff, I'm drawing a blank here. Jeff Hewitt from California, who ran for city council in Calamasa, a little small town in the Inland Empire, outside of LA. And he won. And then he ran for mayor after a term there. And then he became mayor of Calamasa for 2 terms as a libertarian. I mean, he's a libertarian, very libertarian. He got all of the police and the EMTs off the CalPERS, like California retirements, got them all in their own personal 401ks, saved his city from going bankrupt, did really good things there, and then decided to run for city supervisor or county supervisor in Riverside County. Now, Riverside County has a constituency that's bigger than like 7 other states. It has like a $2 billion budget. I mean, it's not little. And he won. And now he's a county supervisor. And now he has the opportunity to really show people what he's doing. He's working his way up the political landscape, right? As a libertarian, doing libertarian things, making the relationships that you have to make to get people to support you for these positions. that's, we need candidates that are going to do things like that. And that's why, one of the reasons why I was so drawn to the Mises Caucus, because they support these local level campaigns, you know, these local and county level campaigns. That's how we're going to do it. But the people that have the visibility, the people that have the following, the people that can build the team, or the people with the money should be running for U.S. Congress and U.S. Senate, because that's how we're going to get, you know, on a national stage. Mm-hmm. And tell people what libertarianism is all about. Those are the people. Those are the people that should be doing it. Everybody else that wants to run for anything should start at city council or mayor, and not go any further than at least the state legislator in their first couple of campaigns. You know what I mean? And learn, mm-hmm. build your bench, build your fundraising drives, build your campaign team, build really good campaign plans. You know, this is how the Republicans win. This is how the Democrats win. They don't have candidates who just jump off the scene and run for Congress and win. You know, it's not, I mean, it's happened, but it's not normal. You know, they all started somewhere. They all started with their county or their state, you know? And so we really need to understand how campaigns work. And I think a lot of libertarians are like, hell yeah, I'm going to go run for governor of Pennsylvania. That's a shout out to you, John Waldenberg. Okay. This guy announced that he was going to be seeking the nomination for governor of Pennsylvania through the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania. And he got 3 likes on his Twitter post. Like, can you not, could you not do that? Could you not? How about you let somebody else in Pennsylvania with a bigger name run for governor of the whole entire state? You know what I mean? That's a lot of work. You got to raise a lot of money. You got to travel to every county in your state. You got to talk to everybody. You got to lay out a legit campaign plan and say, this is how I'm going to help people in Pennsylvania. If you're not going to do that, then don't run. You're making us look worse than we do, you know? So,
yeah,
I don't know. That was one of the reasons why I ran for chair, because I wanted to build tons of candidate resources. Like, I've helped on so many campaigns. I know how to run a campaign, you know? And I'm like, and now I'm actually throwing around the idea of running for Congress. Of course, when I put that out on my Twitter, I had like something like 1600 likes or something, you know? And so it's like, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to run, I might do that just to, cause I know I can go up there and message on that stage, you know?
Yeah. I was one of those likes. I think I quote tweeted you and said, do it, man. But, so you'd have my support if you decide to do that. As we're wrapping up here, I wanted to ask you, if you had become chair, how would you have tried to influence the messaging of the Libertarian Party throughout 2020 and this year? And I know the lockdowns is going to be one of those things, but specifically, how would you have reacted to the January 6th Capitol riot? What would your message have been versus what the Libertarian Party put out? But overall, over the last year, how would you have been different? But specifically with that, I want to hear how you would have messaged differently.
Well, I mean, we really dropped the ball. The Libertarian Party dropped the ball. And here's the one of the biggest reasons I wanted to become the chair of this party is because the chair has full control over all social media for the Libertarian Party. They're also the only person on that board that can circumvent the review committee with their messaging, right? So our chair can put out messaging without going to the APRC or the review committee is what it is. And it doesn't have to be approved. Okay. So I was like, okay, I'm going to set focus messaging goals, right? That's what I was going to do. We're going to keep these 3 things at the top of the list: end the wars, end the Federal Reserve, end the war on drugs, or criminal justice reform, or both. Right. And in the last year, there would have been a lot of talks about this tyranny that has been handed to us on a silver platter. I mean, 100%, nothing like it in our entire lifetimes, nothing like it in my, you know, my grandparents' lifetimes. This has been horrendous for a lot of people, and it's, you know, it's happening to thunderous applause, and we need to show people why it's bad. You know, we need to remind them of the, of every single time the state has used a crisis to gain more power, the Patriot Act. I mean, you know, that never went away. It was supposed to be temporary. The TSA, that never went away. It was supposed to be temporary, you know?
Right.
You know, and now it's not just a spying policy. It's not just people waving a metal detector at you when you're getting on an airplane. They've locked you in your homes. They've deemed who was essential to go to work, who could go feed their children. Now they're talking about what stores you can go to if you don't get a vaccine that they want to give you. I mean, it's bad, and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. Some states are doing great, but it's getting worse. From the federal government, it's getting worse. And the Libertarian Party was so quiet about the whole thing. And I would not have been the quiet chair. I definitely would not have been the quiet chair had I become the chair of this party last year. What was the other question you were talking about?
insurrection. Really pissed. I was pissed with how the Libertarian Party responded to it, because they were almost like, it was hard to tell them apart from AOC with, you know, our holy temple being destroyed or whatever. So I was wondering how you would have reacted to that.
Well, I would have highlighted that people in this country are pissed. They're pissed off. They're done. There's no more trust in the political process, at least from one side. There's no more trust with, you know, people who have been deemed specialists in all kinds of areas. The trust is broken, and we need political leaders that are going to rebuild trust in anything, because there's just no more trust. And, you know, you can call it an insurrection. You can call it a revolt, whatever you want to call it. I call it people who are fed up with a system that has been fucking them for years and years and years. And at some point, those people are going to react to being pushed, and you're starting to see it. It's not just there. It's all over the country. You know, people are riding the streets, whether you agree with what they're writing about or not. They're pissed. People are pissed off, and they're done being pushed around, whether by the state or the police or the National Guard or whatever it is. They're done. People are done. And it's coming to mass violence in the streets. And so I think that, you know, these political leaders, these people who think they know best, should probably heed that warning. And I think that's how we should have messaged from the Libertarian Party, because as libertarians, you know, we center around non-aggression, but non-aggression does not mean, no defensive action. And at some point you have to really start to think, when does it become defensive? You know, these people have been killing people all over the world, locking people in violent rape cages for victimless crimes, stealing our money, devaluing what we have left, lying us into wars. You know, the offensive stopped a long time ago for us. So that's kind of probably the direction I would have taken with the messaging there. Absolutely.
Well, I wish we had had you instead. Well, yeah, man, I think all you guys from the Mises Caucus that I know are great. And, you know, as I said, initially, I wasn't sure. I wasn't on the other side either. I was kind of in the middle, and I saw all the mudslinging. I didn't know what to think. But I think anyone who comes in with an open mind and really pays attention to what's going on, they're going to see who the good actors are and who's an agitator, who's trying to cause problems, who's gatekeeping, who wants to keep their throne, as you put it. I think that's a very good way to put it. But I want to thank you for coming on. I know you're a blue collar worker like me. You actually work as many or more hours as I do. I'm a huge fan of your show. I'm a huge fan of you, what you're doing. I think it's great. But why don't you just plug anything you want to add in here, where people can follow you, you know, where they can pay attention to you to see if you are going to run for Congress or not. Just give us the whole scoop on where we can keep up with what's going on with Josh Smith.
Well, definitely go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/fightthedespots. That's DESPOTS. That's where my show is live streamed at least every Wednesday and Friday. I've been doing more. This week I'm doing 4 shows: Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Friday's show will actually be recorded early, but usually it's a live show at 7:30 p.m. Corn Standard Time, I like to call it. That's Central Time for you guys who don't know about the Iowa corn. Definitely please subscribe there and watch stuff. I do have ads up now, so I'm trying to grift that ad revenue into being a stay-at-home dad of 7 eventually. But then if you want to watch my war with the blue check marks, you can follow me at Twitter at Joshua at Large. We have a lot of fun on Twitter. I don't know how long they'll keep me on there, but we got like 16,000 followers on Twitter now. So we hit that today, so that's exciting. man. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the link to your YouTube channel and your Twitter, so everyone can follow you there. But yeah, man.
I also have an Odyssey. So when they kick me off YouTube, all my stuff is backed up on Odyssey. It automatically syncs over there. You can't watch it live there yet, but I am in the beta for doing live streams at Odyssey. So that will be coming soon. When I get my restream up, I'll be doing the Facebook page, Periscope, YouTube, Odyssey. They'll be live streaming to all those platforms. And then, of course, you can listen to my platform in audio form on like 12 or 15 different podcast catchers, including like Google and Spotify and all that stuff, too. So thanks again, man. I really appreciate you. And I just want to echo what you said to me, man. I love your show. I think you're doing great work. I think people should follow you and subscribe to you and keep checking out what you're doing, because you're really doing good stuff, regardless of where you do your podcast. It's a good damn show, man.
Yeah, state by state. We'll have to do this again. I like talking with you. I like the way you think. It's good. Everyone, I will be coming back on the show on Thursday with Tom Woods. If you came over here from Josh tweeting this out, please subscribe to the channel. He's right. The Twitter to YouTube pipeline is clogged. It's not a free flow. So please subscribe. Wednesday night I'll be going on Liberty Lockdown. I think he usually has it up the next day because he doesn't do them live, but look for me there and go follow Josh on Twitter and subscribe to him on YouTube. Thanks, Josh. We'll do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Reed. I really appreciate it, brother.